Hey, y'all. Welcome to the Marty Smith's America podcast. This is volume 100-something. We have an amazing guest today. Somebody that I've long admired and always really wondered about and wanted to chat with, but never had the opportunity over all these years. And that person is Warrick Dunn, legendary NFL running back with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and with the Atlanta Falcons, and All-American at Florida State University. And someone whose name is just synonymous with excellence. And not only is it synonymous with excellence, it's synonymous with kindness. And if you don't know Warrick's story, we get into it a little bit here. Travis and I both agree we're going to have Warrick back in the future, because he did join us on behalf of Nationwide, who is an amazing sponsor for the NFL Walter Payton Man of the Year Award. And Warrick won that award back in 2004 and is inextricably linked with one of the current stars in the NFL. And we'll get into that during the discussion. But I just had so much more I wanted to dive into with Warrick than we had the time for. But y'all are going to really be filled up by just this man's selflessness and his perspective and kind of how all of those things were developed through a horrific moment in his youth. And he could, you know, I always say, I just said this to a friend of mine who's going through something right now the other day. We all face obstacles in this life. We're all flawed in this life. And we have two choices. We can either be bitter or we can be better. And man, Warrick made his siblings' lives better in a way that inspires me so much. And it will inspire you guys that much too. And from there, he just had an amazing career in the game of football. And he used that game of football to make countless lives better. Y'all are going to be fired up when you hear Warrick speak about that path. And trust me, you're going to be left wanting more from everything that he had to say. I also want to remind you guys to check out The Right Time with Bomani Jones podcast. Download and subscribe to that, along with Marty Smith's America, wherever you get your podcasts. Here is our conversation on Marty Smith's America with 2004 Walter Payton NFL Man of the Year recipient, Warrick Dunn. Joining us this week on Marty Smith's America on behalf of Nationwide is NFL legend Warrick Dunn, somebody I've admired basically my entire life. He was the Walter Payton NFL Man of the Year in 2004, and we'll get to the Man of the Year and what that means to you to achieve that and to earn that, and what it means to your peers to do so, Warrick. But I'd like to get started today with Deshaun Watson. I did a piece about the Habitat for Humanity initiative that Deshaun and his mother were benefactors of back in during his youth. He was 9 or so years old, and there was a guy who furnished that entire house, and it built a friendship and a brotherhood. So if you would explain to our listeners how you came to know Deshaun and his family.
Well, I was playing with the Atlanta Falcons at that time, and I think I met Deshaun when he was 11 years old. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what we do at the charity is that we've always got information on the family, you know, how much money they make, what their situation is. And when I learned about his family, I thought they were compelling, that this is someone that you definitely want to help support. And not knowing Deshaun as a football player that he is today, but really understanding what his mom's dream was, to run around home. And, you know, we wanted to be able to provide that opportunity that she can create that stability for Deshaun and his other brothers and sisters. So, you know, I'm just thankful over the years. I had no idea that Deshaun would be, you know, the great football player that he is today, but the credit really goes to his mom. She worked hard. She was committed. She put herself in a situation so that Deshaun could live a better life. So I give her all the credit. I mean, it's mad respect for her. And Deshaun is just really just taking his blessings and just advance them. You know, he's doing what individuals should do. You know, we pour water on the flower and hope it grows. He's really blossomed into a great young man.
He's a wonderful human being. He's someone that I covered extensively when he was at Clemson and had such a transcendent career there. And I got to know him on a very personal level. And he's someone I admire tremendously as well. I wonder, as somebody who knows the NFL business the way that you do, and it is a business, what your thoughts are on the way the Texans have managed his situation this offseason?
Well, it's a two-way street. I think, you know, what the Texans are trying to do and what they did is they were trying to hire the best individual. You know, as a player, we do have opinions and we want things a certain way, obviously. you know, and things don't always work out that way. I mean, when I was with free agent, I was a free agent and I didn't want to leave Tampa. I ended up signing with the Atlanta Falcons, leaving Tampa. And, you know, for me, I was kind of bitter in the beginning because you really don't understand. This is a business. Nothing is personal. It is a business. And I just think this is the opportunity for Deshaun to really understand that, hey, you have great football prowess on the football field, your quarterback, they know you're a great leader and so forth. You know, but you have to understand in the front office, they're going to run this also as a business because you have to make money, but you're also trying to figure out ways to put the best product and the best coaches on the sideline and on the product on the field. So for him, it's a balancing act. It's really, do I say how I feel and get, you know, some pushback, or do I just go along with the norms? And I just think he's stepping out a little bit and pushing back because he's a winner. He wants to win, and you have to give him credit for fighting for that. But this is really a business and just part of the game.
You noted being a free agent and not wanting to leave Tampa. Was that the moment that you realized it's a business? And what's – when you do realize that, Warwick, what's it feel like?
Well, let me tell you, I didn't realize it at that moment. It took me probably a year later to really understand that this is a business. It was nothing personal. It was a business decision that the Buccaneers had to make at the time. I mean, Rich McKay was the general manager. You know, a couple of years later, he comes up to Atlanta with me. So, and I told him I was mad with him in the beginning, but I had to learn to understand that it was nothing personal. He was making business decisions, and that's just a part of it. So, you know, it's an opportunity for growth long term that, you know, life has its challenges. You know, what I went through as a kid and what Deshaun has went through as a kid, we have our challenges. How do we respond to adversity? Says a lot about an individual.
You talk about your challenges as a young person, and there might, even though your story is well chronicled, your book back in 2008 is phenomenal. If you guys have not seen Warwick's book, please go get it. It's just an unbelievable story. If you could just share a synopsis of what you went through, and you talk about growing up fast, guys. I don't know anybody who I've ever heard had to grow up faster than Warwick did. Just explain it to us, please.
Well, you know, I was a senior in high school. 2 days after my 18th birthday, my mom was ambushed. She was shot and killed in the line of duty. She was a Baton Rouge City police officer, and she was working overtime, trying to make extra money. And they were making a routine night deposit. Her and the grocery store manager was making a routine night deposit at the bank. And, you know, two guys opened fire on a police car. My mom was shot and she was killed. You know, my life changed. I was the oldest, the six of us. I'm the oldest of six, 18 years old. So now my responsibility really comes down to, I have to take care of my five younger brothers and sisters. And that's really been my my drive, my push, you know, and I had to raise those individuals. But, you know, the reason that I started the charity, I started the program Homes for Holidays, the reason that, you know, I won Walter Payton Man of the Year is because of what I went through. My mom's dream of home ownership, and that program, it has, so far to date, we've been around for 23 years and we've helped 188 single parent families who are becoming first time homeowners. And that's given them $5,000 down payment, but also fully furnishing their homes with food, furniture, linens, garden tools, TVs, computers, all the way down to the toothbrush. So we figured out that we can help individuals have a true, fresh start to home ownership. They won't go back into debt. They have a better opportunity for success down the road. And, you know, so far it's been a positive program. And I can tell you, I wouldn't be where I'm at today without that program. I wouldn't have won a Walter Payton Man of the Year Award. I wouldn't partner with Nationwide, you know, you know, they're trying to do a great job, and they are doing a great job of really promoting, you know, what guys do off the field, really talking about the things that are in the community, how NFL players are making positive change in their community. And they've invested $1.3 million in the community, but also, you know, guys have opportunity when they get nominated, you know, they get $40,000. The winner gets $250,000 if they win. But they're also spreading out. They're promoting this more. They're trying to create more opportunities for guys to really tell their story, but also impact their communities in ways that could potentially be life-changing. So for me, you know, I'm happy that I was able to be a part of this elite group of individuals. You know, this is the highest award you can win with the National Football League, and I'm just happy that I'm a part of that elite group of individuals.
Why is it the highest award that you can win?
Well, if you think about it, you know, you want great athletes who play well on the field, but you also want guys who, you know, they're not just great athletes, but they're great human beings. They care about their community. And, you know, a lot of guys that you see win this award, they're great athletes, but they're great humanitarians. They care about their community. They're making such an impact that is life-changing. It's not just in that moment, but potentially long-term. And, you know, you have guys who don't just care about the game of football. You have guys who care about people and life. And for me, that's important. And it's a great reason why Nationwide is supporting it. And they're behind it. They're promoting it. They're backing it. And you know, the NFL couldn't have a prouder partner, in my opinion, with Nationwide, because this is the most, like I said, prestigious award that a player can win. Offensive Player of the Year award. You know, you're successful because the guys around you, you know, it's not just you as an individual. You know, when you win the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award through Nationwide, you know, it's what you do in your community. And yes, it takes a community to help you move forward, but who has to start that path? You have to go around it. You have to, you know, drive other individuals, build relationships. So it's a lot that goes into really establishing yourself and making that impact.
I'm fascinated. If we could go back for a minute to going to Florida State, playing for Bobby Bowden. I mean, the one of the most dominant eras for a program in the history of the sport, the whole thing, right? Yeah. How do you raise 5 siblings while you're managing school and football? That's two full – school and football are two full-time jobs by itself. Yeah. I got 3 kids. I can't imagine – How did you do that?
Well, you have a lot of support, right? My grandmother. So when I left and went to Tallahassee, the kids, my grandmother moved in. So she was managing the house on the day to day, you know. So but every holiday, every weekend that I was free, I was on the highway driving back to Baton Rouge, Louisiana. I was constantly involved. I didn't spend a summer in Tallahassee. I mean, I didn't party. I didn't drink, do anything. I mean, it was about football, you know, school, football, family. And it was really about family, school, and football. And believe it or not, I had great support from Coach Bowden. I used to go to his office once a week almost and really just talk to him about, you know, Coach, this is the situation I have with my sister. You know, can you give me an example? He would give me like real life examples of what he did with his kids. So he was an outlet for me to have, but I can't say I did it alone, right? I mean, I had a lot of support. People understood the situation. Probably the hardest that I had was when I got drafted and went to Tampa. I was just rookie of the year. The next year, the 3 youngest ones moved in with me in Tampa. I'm trying to play professional football, and now I'm going to PTA meetings, attending games on weekend, making sure they do chores, their homework. So It was a stressful time. And Coach Dungy, him and his wife supported me, and Rich McKay, they all supported me because they understood what was important to me. And again, you know, Nationwide understands what's really important, you know, to make change in people's lives. And that's really to support the guys in the National Football League with the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award.
All right. I know you got to hop. I got one more thing because I was so moved by this. Just one more question.
Yes.
Warrick, I was floored by you going to meet the individuals that murdered your mom.
Right.
I was completely floored that it was something that you needed to do for your own solace and to free your own soul to forgive them. Why was that important to you?
Well, you know, I lost my mom in 1993, and I didn't start going to counseling until I moved to Atlanta in 2003. So just like 10 years of no grieving, no crying, and I had a lot built up on the inside. You know, if you'd have met me during that time, you would say I never talked to anybody. I didn't smile. I wasn't living life. I was just coasting. Mm-hmm. For me, I was doing what I had to do as a, I felt like I was not a brother, but a parent to my younger brothers and sisters. And through counseling, I got to the point where I had a, started having a lot of questions. I was able to express myself and I needed to know why. I kept asking why. So I just got to the point where I asked my counselor, do you think it's okay? If it's a good idea if I really want to meet with the guys who did that and ask them why? And I wanted answers. She thought I was in a really good place to do that. So we set it up and I went to Angola prison, sat down face to face with the guy, and he wasn't behind bars. We sat at a round table. I sat across from him and he was there. And you know, I was searching for peace in my life. And you know, the only way to get that is you go to the source. And so I was looking for peace. And the warden is crazy because the warden told me he's not going to admit to doing anything wrong. This and that. I said, okay. So that's the first thing he said to me when I sat down at the table, that I didn't do it. You know, it was strange because he can tell me everything, you know, that was happening to my family. What I did as a football player, what my brother was doing in college, my sister was running track. You know, he kept up with everybody. And that was strange to me. But I told him I forgave him. And that I was here to say that I forgive you. I wanted to take that power that he had over my life back so that I can move on and so that I can, you know, be free, live my life. I didn't want to have kids. I never, you know, I couldn't tell you the last time I really expressed myself about, you know, wanting to have a future, wanting to have my own kids, a relationship. I was scared to hold another woman's hand. I just didn't feel comfortable because, you know, my mom was my best friend. And when you lose that at an early age, you know, I felt like I lost my world. So, you know, it's a journey. And I just had to get to that point where I wanted to be free of that and take that power back. So that was my journey. And I know I talked about that in the first chapter of the book, but, you know, and the book came out in 2008 during President, you know, Obama's being elected president. So it was number one seller in that category, but because all the presidential books was out that year, you know, I got lost in the shuffle. But, you know, the book has done really well. People, they connect with it.
Y'all make sure you go get it. I know you're on the run. That's a story of your life, isn't it, brother?
Always, man.
Thank you so much for your time. You're a light in the world. Appreciate your work and help with the NFL Man of the Year. And Nationwide's fortunate to have you as an ambassador. So take care. Enjoy the Super Bowl. I know you're going to say go Bucks. We'll see who wins it. Take care, brother. Thank you.
I appreciate you having me on, man.
I remember doing a story about Deshaun Watson the first day I ever met Deshaun. It was Deshaun's freshman year at Clemson, I think. And I went down to South Carolina and did a feature on the fact that Dabo Swinney and Deshaun Watson and Wayne Gallman and all those guys were, you know, that are Hunter Renfro are NFL stars now, were building Habitat for Humanity, a Habitat for Humanity home down near Clemson. And I go down there and I chat with Dabo about the initiative, and I chat with Deshaun about what it meant to him to come full circle in that way, because to our conversation with Warwick there, Deshaun's mom, what a hero. She was working so hard to get her family a better life. And she saw a path and an avenue through Habitat for Humanity to give her children a better life, their own roof, in their own house, in a moment when they were so impressionable. I think Deshaun was 9 years old. I think Warrick said there he was 11 when they met. So it was somewhere around that time, a boy. And that boy then had someone he could look at as an example in Warrick Dunn that, okay, to whom much is given, much is required. And Warrick furnished that house all the way down to the last gallon of milk, like I said there while I was chatting with Warrick. And I just find that story to be so fabulous. And I always have ever since I met Deshaun. And I got to know his mom, Deanne, as well. And she's just an amazing human being. And Deshaun makes no bones about it that he's a mama's boy. And I have seen it in person. Every single time that she's in the stadium, he's finding her. And he champions his mama and the sacrifices that she made to make sure that, you know, an impoverished childhood became a fulfilled childhood. I just think it's wonderful. Everything about it's wonderful.
What I love is Deshaun got this gift and Warrick was just helping out a family. He didn't, you know, and then Deshaun ends up being this person. So now Deshaun is now in the same position that Warrick was to pay it forward and is doing that. And I don't think you can find one bad thing that I don't think I've ever heard a reporter person say one bad thing about Deshaun. He's class personified. It is amazing the things that he's doing. And that's why, like, I feel bad for him right now with this Texans mess, because it's not his doing.
Yeah, it's not his doing.
He did nothing wrong. He simply had an owner lie to him.
He gave back so much to that. He loves the Houston community. They embraced him and they loved him from the jump. And one reason that they love him is because he is such a light in the world. And the other reason they love him is he's a bad man behind center. And he has been swimming upstream. And I heard it myself when J.J. Watt said it walking off the field in the season finale in 2020. I am so sorry. These are J.J. Watt's words. I am so sorry we wasted one of your years of your career. And that tells you all you need to know.
That's very powerful, because that's J.J. Watt apologizing. That's
a first ballot Hall of Famer, dude.
That's a three-time defensive NFL MVP apologizing to a – like, it's not like some just random, you know, offensive lineman. This is a stud in his own right. And like you said, a Hall of Famer apologizing to Deshaun Watson.
And not only – all the success on the field for J.J. Watt. As you recall, in 2017, he too was the Walter Payton NFL Man of the Year. If you remember what he did after that flood, after Hurricane Harvey, he raised more than $40 million for the Houston community. So this is a guy that is an absolute legend and beloved in Houston, saying that to another guy, a young buck, who is beloved in Houston. And I feel awful for Deshaun too. I mean, you know my relationship with him, and you know, I mean, that is my guy. And I want the absolute best for him. And I said earlier this month on Twitter, I said, holy cow, dude, if Deshaun Watson comes to Charlotte, North Carolina, they'll run it. They can't print enough gear. It would be the greatest thing. And we love Teddy Two Gloves, but Deshaun's Deshaun.
You must be a dysfunctional franchise if J.J. Watt and Deshaun Watson want out. I feel bad. I mean, those two guys are just amazing guys. And you're right, though. Wherever he goes, however many jerseys they print, they're going to sell those and they're going to have back orders.
Yep. Yep. It's going to be I mean, it's I can't wait to see where he ends up, whether he ends up in Houston.
Could you imagine if the Panthers were able to get Deshaun and not have to trade away Christian McCaffrey?
It would be look, man, Cam Newton. Look, when we had Cam Newton in his absolute Optimus Prime days, it felt really special around here. And if we got DW4 and had CMC, look out, man. Look out. It'll be fun. But I can't wait to see where Deshaun ends up. Thank you so much to Warrick for taking time and sharing his life with us. Again, my hope, honestly, is that you guys listening my hope is that y'all go, my gosh, I want more of that, because we certainly did. And we're going to try to get him back on again, because I just want to dive so much deeper into it. But look, Warrick was really busy. He was doing appearance appearance for Nationwide.
Yeah, we did this the week of going into the Super Bowl. And so he had a ton of interviews, and it was so good. And we had some other things pop up, and we're like, let's hold off on airing this because it's too good to put it with another interview. And while it was one of our shorter interviews, pound for pound, it might have been our best interview. And so the people at Nationwide are going to be getting some emails from me here in a few weeks to say, hey, any way we can circle back and go a little longer with Warrick, because, I mean, the things that you could talk to him about, is career on the field, off. I mean, he's just an amazing person.
Really is. And I'm really grateful for him, and I'm a better man for having had that few minutes chatting with him. Shout out a thank you to our boy Jarrett Dunbar over there at Nationwide, who always gives. Speaking of Cam Newton, they gave Nationwide set up our opportunity to chat with Cam a couple years ago, and they've given us great guests ever since they've been the title sponsor of the Walter Payton NFL Man of the Year Award. So thank you so much to those guys, and thanks to Warrick. Speaking of great people, Michael McDowell is the Daytona 500 champion. Travis, let's get into NASCAR for just a minute here. That is a very popular win in the NASCAR community, because Michael is a wonderful guy, a man of great faith who professes his faith and is one of those guys who's always there for others. He always has been. I mean, this guy has been grinding for 15 years in the Cup Series trying to get that first career win. And I remember being at Texas Motor Speedway many moons ago when Michael drove that double zero car down into the corner and went ass over tea kettle about 45 times. He hit the wall so hard. I mean, look, you know, Ryan McGee, our brother, did an amazing job leading up to the Daytona 500 on all of the reporting on the safety initiatives since Dale Earnhardt died. His piece on E60 was fabulous. And Michael McDowell is one of those guys that's alive because of all of the safety initiatives in the aftermath of February 18th, 2001. And now Michael McDowell wins the Daytona 500. And I thought it was so cool that Denny Hamlin went on social media and said, don't y'all go thinking for 1 second that that was a flukish victory, that he didn't deserve that victory. And Denny is so right. I was going to write the same thing last night. That group, Front Row Motorsports, owned by Bob Jenkins, they are like always up front at the end of plate races. David Ragan won a plate race in one of their cars. They have always been up front at these kinds of races, and McDowell is always there and just waiting on the opportunity to capitalize. And I'm so happy for him that that happened in the Daytona 500, the Great American Race. Wow. I mean, just a really emotional, uber popular win in the NASCAR community. I'm thrilled for him.
This was his first win. So what does a win, like, to make this your first, what does just getting that one win do for someone?
It's validation for Michael, because again, he's been around a really long time, and he's one of these guys that has such an open heart to being a great person and slogged along over all these years, man. And just been kind to others. And so I think in a lot of ways, I can't wait to hear him download on this. It's really hard to be interviewed right after you do something like that, because you haven't processed yet what it really means to you. But In my estimation, just as somebody that's known Michael now for 15 years plus, I would imagine that the first thing is he gave it to God because of his faith. And he's so grateful that the Lord returned that faithfulness this way. And I'm not trying to get all preachy or anything here, but I know how Michael operates. And it's his faith first. And so I'm pretty sure that's probably where it went. It then probably went to his family next, because he's an awesome family man, a great dad, an amazing husband. And and to Bob Jenkins, his car owner, and to Love's Travel Centers. At Marty Smith's America, we love us some Love's Travel Centers, y'all, because that's where the Smith family stops every chance we get. And so how apropos is it that the Love's Travel Center car won on Valentine's Day?
I knew that it was going to be a well-received win when after the race, Joey Logano, who was in just a crazy accident, that crash that we can get into in a second. But one of the things he said is, if it wasn't me or my teammates, I'm happy him.
And Joey went to victory lane too. Joey went to victory lane so that he could give Michael a huge hug. And I want to say one other thing too. I thought that the Fox booth, all of the talent at Fox, all the producers, everybody involved, and the on-air talent, but Clint Boyer's injection into the equation for Fox Sports is a brilliant injection into their overall scope of their NASCAR coverage. And it's the same. It's the, like, Dale Jr.'s popularity is its own barometer, because people, Dale Jr.'s fans will watch anything he does because he's Dale Jr. But the number one best thing that Dale Jr. brings to NBC is passion and energy, unbridled. And that's exactly what Clint did for Fox on Sunday on a marathon day. I've lived those days. Those days are awful.
I don't know how they did. I mean, I turned away and watched other things and go back, and, you know, there's Shannon Spake doing stuff. That was an all day event for those guys. Look,
no doubt. And I've lived it, and it's not fun. And it's just, it's not fun. And I thought that Clint was very good. Also, shout out to our boy Tom Rinaldi again. He did an amazing piece with Ryan Newman, and it was weird as hell to see Tom doing NASCAR. And I had an amazing text exchange with Tom throughout the entire day about that. And he's just an amazing talent. He's an amazing talent. And I want to make sure that if you guys have not seen McGee's piece on Dale Earnhardt, make sure you go find it. Very, very, very well done. Very thorough. It's a really good day. Ultimately, a really good day for NASCAR and a really trying day. But I'm thrilled for them that they got the Daytona 500 in. They'll turn right back around and go back to Daytona to run a road course.
One of the funniest things of the day didn't happen. It happened in a car, but not on the track. Did you see Chase Briscoe?
Oh, yeah, dude. He's crazy. I wouldn't have gone to the Panda Express if I had to strap back into a car. Hopefully he stopped and got some toilet paper too.
So for people not that see it, his wife tweeted out a photo. He's still in his fire suit going through Panda Express to get some food. And I get that you're going to be hungry and you know you got some time, but I don't know if Panda Express is the right one to go with.
Yeah, man. That was gutsy, man. I mean, that's, you know, you are gambling. That is a big gamble, man. And hopefully if he did gamble, he won. That's all I got to say.
What do the drivers do during rain delay? Do they try to get a nap? Like, what do they just sit there? Like, what are they?
I think it's different for every guy. I mean, everybody has a different protocol, but I think if they could get a nap, they would. I don't know that I'd be able to, because I'm sure that their minds are constantly spinning with strategy and thinking about what their car did over that 15 laps, how it felt. Okay, when we get there, they're meeting with their crew chief, they're meeting with their car chief, they're meeting with their engineer. Okay, this is what I felt we need to improve. This, when we get back and can go touch the race car again. That's one thing that I was going back and forth with Kenny Mayne last night about when the race did go back to yellow. Kenny was laughing. I had a long conversation with Kenny on the phone. I'm like, dude, they can't touch the car until they display the yellow flag. They just have to sit there and stare at it, no matter how tore up it is. And then they display the yellow flag, and the guy's like, it's like a bunch of ants, man.
It's like Black Friday at the mall. It's just, they just go, like, they had all their tools and everything literally right next to the car, and they were ready, like, in position for that flag to go yellow.
Yeah, man. Saws unite. But ultimately, man, amazing day for Michael McDowell and Front Row Motorsports. Thrilled for those guys. I can't imagine what that means to that organization, because they have been committed to the sport for so long, Ford Motor Company has been committed to them for so long, and now they roll that thing into victory lane. I mean, it didn't even look like it had a scratch on it.
It was the only car there, I think, that got away without at least a scratch.
Yeah, it's funny. Before the race, I put out who y'all picking, and I've said, I'm going with Ryan Blaney. This is the year. 15 laps into the thing. He had it missed, too. Blaney had it missed. And
made it
then
through.
He got put down in the grass and you with the splitter on the thing, and you got no chance. I mean, when that splitter hits the grass, it's like a bomb explodes under the hood, and it just tore the whole front end off that thing, and he was done. He almost missed it. Denny Hamlin, again, the standard at this point in plate races, dominated the race. And I thought Bubba Wallace, too. I said it on a couple of radio shows this week. I knew Bubba would have the opportunity to win that race because Bubba's a great plate racer. Really, I'm still calling it plate racing. I think those of us who are old school will always call it that. There are no more restrictor plates, but it's still that kind of racing. He's great at it. Really, really talented at it. And now he's got a piece that can, you know, that he can drive to victory lane. And so some more NASCAR lingo, a piece is a car. He's got a car that he can drive to victory lane and will. I did find it interesting on a pre-race show when Michael Strahan interviewed MJ and Denny and Bubba. MJ said, I feel like he can get a couple wins this year. Man, it's hard as hell to win in Cup. That's all I got to say. I'm not saying he can't. I'm saying, like, Denny needs to call up MJ and go, bro, look, if we make the playoffs, let's just pump the brakes on all the wins right now.
Yeah, I found that really interesting. That I wonder how MJ is going to be able to handle being a team owner and managing expectations, because this is a sport where you can be great and then one little thing happens that's out of your control. You know, like you said with Blaney, like, things just happen. This is a sport. And so it's very tough, as you know, we saw here, getting your first win. It's not an easy thing to get into victory lane.
No, it's not only is it not easy, it's very, very difficult. And I think they do have the opportunity to do it. Bubba's a really good driver at Daytona and Talladega. He is a really good driver at Martinsville Speedway. So I think they're going to have the opportunity to do it. So NASCAR is off and running. It's cool. Thank y'all for listening. We appreciate it. Appreciate y'all. Also, it pumped us up that we got a shout out from Barrett Sports Media that we were one of the top podcasts as voted by our peers, I think, Travis.
Yeah, it's by the peers. I'll take it.
Me too, man. I'm very grateful for that. It means the world to me. So thank you guys for listening and for subscribing, rating, and reviewing. It matters a lot. It matters to our sponsors, whom you heard about already. So just thank you guys for caring.
And one request I have also, if they can subscribe, rate, and review, awesome. And then if they go a step further and tell a friend, because that's how these podcasts grow is, you know, we can tell you to do this and other podcasts can mention us, but it's word of mouth. It's kind of like when you watch a show on Netflix and you tell somebody about it. So that's, you know, if you can tell somebody else about the podcast, that'd be awesome.
Basically pretend we're the Tiger King.
I mean,
thanks so much to
you're pretty close to it.
Thanks so much to our law enforcement officials all over the country working hard to keep these communities safe. Thank you for our fire and rescue teams, our first responders, and I'm so grateful for the United States military. Thank you guys for your sacrifice. We live in the greatest nation, and I'm so grateful to live in a country where I can go and do and be whatever I feel like, whatever I aspire to be. Y'all be good. Have an awesome week. We'll see you next time around. This is Marty Smith's America.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.